any of the resources that we have, the curriculum that we have, we'll give you that. You don't have to pay for any of that stuff. People pay us to help them execute all that. What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the Vacation Rental Revolution podcast.
Yes,
we're here with Whiskey Wednesday.
Yes, sir.
Last Whiskey Wednesday of the year.
My favorite, though. This is my favorite one to do.
Awesome.
I love this one.
We're gonna dive in. Mm-hmm. So we're going to, how was your trip? You got to go home for Christmas. Hopefully everybody had a great Christmas. How was your, mm-hmm. you were able to get back home for mm-hmm. Christmas?
Went home for Christmas. It was really nice to see the family. Of course, that my main thing is I just wanted to smoke cigars with my father and have deep conversations, and that's what we got to do.
You did it.
I did it. That was an amazing time. I loved talking with them and just poking their brain about things. So that was fantastic. The turbulence on the plane was terrible, dude.
You are not a fan of flying. So bad, dude. Just so everybody listening is knows that old Jake Sheehy does not like to fly.
No, I don't like to be in a metal tube 35,000 feet in the air. No, I'm not into it.
Little bumps don't sit well.
The checked bag luggage things were opening. And once you have babies crying, bro, okay, get this. Both flights there and back, babies immediately behind me, in the row behind me. On the way there, one of them definitely, filled the diaper, as you will say. So we're just sitting in this smell and they're crying. And on the way back, terrible turbulence, crying again. And bro, I'm freaking out. Not my favorite thing.
No,
not my favorite.
It's. I'll tell you. You know, once you have kids, mm-hmm. you're gonna have a little more grace for those people that are traveling with kids because it is a pain. And when the babies are crying and they need to be changed and you can't get up because the seatbelts are on and they're, especially if it's in takeoff or landing, I promise you those parents are so stressed out. And so as bad as you think it made your flight, their flight was way worse.
Yeah,
because they're worried about you and everybody else on the plane. And so I always feel so bad when I hear the little babies crying and on the planes. And it's just like, I've been there. We used to travel with Wyatt and Grace when they were real young. We started traveling. Their first trip was, they were 3 months old and they've been traveling since. And it was, I've had a couple of those instances on the plane where you're just stressing. They're crying. They need to be changed and you're just, you got to go change them in a little,
it's bumpy.
Little teeny bathroom that I barely fit in anyways. And then all of a sudden you're trying to change the little baby in there. Yeah. Man. So I always feel bad for those parents and the kids because I promise you they're more stressed out than we are listening to it. I promise you that.
I mean, I understand that. But nevertheless, it was good seeing the family and it was a good trip. Good Christmas?
Great.
How was the prime rib, dude?
Oh, it was awesome. We cooked two 8-pound prime ribs. I got two of them and it was had the family over, did our regular prime rib Christmas dinner, and it was fun. Ooh. It was smoked them and got to smoke some whiskey. I taught the family how we smoke our whiskey, everybody enjoyed that, and so that was fun.
Man, my dad actually made prime ribs too. First time ever. He's never done that. One of them really nice pink and really tender, really good, man, fantastic. The other one, dark gray on the inside.
Oh, really?
So tough, dude.
It just cooked faster, dude.
I guess so. Yeah. But
were
one
they
of
different
them,
sizes? Do you know? Did they look about?
No,
the
exact
size?
Same thing. Really? We used two different ovens, so maybe that could have been the same something. Yeah. But I mean, the prime rib when it's good,
it's good.
It was so good. Yeah. We need to start doing.
Oh, prime that's ribs. Too bad when you overcook it a little bit. Yeah, prime rib needs to be served like medium rare, medium
so
max.
So
I feel
good.
Like and. So good. If it gets overcooked a little bit, and it's such an expensive cut of meat, so you feel so bad. You don't want to mess it up, right? You just you don't want to mess it up at all because you're like, it's always a little nerve wracking whenever we're cooking it, and we do it the same way every time. And it, knock on wood, has always turned out great. But man, I'm always nervous every time I throw one on. I'm like, man, don't mess this up.
Dude, when he cut into it and he saw it, he was so upset. But honestly, with the pink one with the little horseradish on it,
So
man,
good.
I loved you. It was so good.
So good. Awesome.
Okay. We're jumping in?
Let's jump in. Okay. What do we got today?
Okay. We're doing 2026 predictions. Mm. We got a lot of stuff here. We're going housing cost, interest rates, vacation travel cost, Airbnb money, how much money is being spent. We're going to talk about, will more people jump into the STR market or will they sell and they leave? What are we looking like at the seasons? Are they changing? How should people handle their seasons? What are the big dog players doing? Airbnb, Vrbo, Expedia, what are they going to do? We're going to talk about, is there a new frontier other places? Or should we be buying short-term rentals in other places? What does AI look like? And then we're ending it with the most useful advice for someone going into 2026. So we got a lot of stuff. We're starting analytical, and then we're going to kind of go into some opinions here. My favorite episodes. First one, housing cost.
All right.
Boom. Here we go. We got this one pulled up. Looking at this chart, and of course, I will always put the links of our sources in the bio. You can check it out.
Yep.
And if you're watching, of course, the picture's on. Now, if I'm looking at this, dude, I think they're just going to continue to go up based off this chart right here. Well, what do you?
Yeah, you're looking at a historic, you know, a 60-year chart,
yeah.
Which when you look at real estate historically, yeah, absolutely. It goes up. We know it goes up over time. It's no secret. I mean, we always say the disclaimer, we can't guarantee the future, but right. I mean, it's pretty in the, you know, kind of in the bag that it's going to go up over time. Now, does it have corrections? Does it have hiccups? Does mm-hmm. it do different things? And the mm-hmm. answer is yes. Mm-hmm. The real answer too, though, is we've been in a little bit of a correction the last mm-hmm. couple of years. We've mm-hmm. been a little bit of a stagnant real estate market the last couple of years.
Yeah.
We've had a very interesting market because we, as soon as interest rates skyrocketed in 2022, mm-hmm. And you know, it kind of put buyers and sellers kind of froze, you know, mm-hmm. there was no move up buyers. People were like, I'm not selling this house. I have a 3% mortgage. Why would I go right. sell it and get a 7 or 8% mortgage? Mm-hmm. When they, you know, cause they double or tripled in, you know, quick, right. Mm-hmm. Like overnight, it felt like in about a 5 month period, they almost doubled.
Mm-hmm.
And so yeah. we saw rates go up immediately. The real estate, residential real estate market contracted, you know, sellers weren't putting homes on the market. So we already had an inventory issue. Mm-hmm. We had a worse inventory issue now. Buyers were saying, hold on, I'm not ready to buy yet.
Right.
And they got the sticker shock of the interest rates and everything else. Mm. And they stopped buying.
Mm.
And so nobody could really figure out for the last 3 or 4 years. It feels like it's like, hey, listen, since kind of mid 2022, mm-hmm. it felt like we couldn't figure out if it's a buyer market or a seller market because we had really low inventory still. Mm. We still had demand. Demand softened. And so, but we also had really high interest rates. And so there was some challenges in the real estate market. And we've seen that. We're starting to see some inventory come back on the market. We're starting to see buyers get back in the market. We're starting to see interest rates come down a little bit. Mm. Not really fast, which I think is a good thing. I don't think we're going to see a rate cut at the first of 2026. I think rates are going to hold. And I actually think that's a good thing for the real estate market in particular, because you've got to stabilize them and bring them down slow, so that buyers start inching into the market instead of just opening the floodgates. Because if the floodgates open and the buyers jump in really, really fast, prices skyrocket. And we've also got housing prices really, they kind of stabilized. They didn't really come down, right? House prices the last couple of years, they didn't really drop. They kind of hung out in about the middle. We were hanging out at about a 1 to 2% growth rate year over year. And then we, since, cause 2022, you see that the chart, it still was going up, but that's because we didn't really see those rate hikes. They started about mid-year and then kind of hung out throughout the rest of the year. So you see where they started about, March. And then you see like between March and August, you start seeing those rate hikes, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
And so mid-year they started going up. So you still saw some price growth, pretty good price growth in 2022, but it was attributed to the first half of the year. Since then, it's kind of been sitting about even, right? You're about a 1 to 2% appreciation if you averaged all the markets across the board. Now, obviously, we talk about all the time that we buy quality assets in quality areas, and they appreciate a little bit better than the average. And so some of us in the short-term rental game that are able to pick quality locations, we're seeing a little bit better than that. But in general, we've been seeing kind of stagnant market as far as growth. I think we're going to start to see that growth come back.
Okay.
There's some economic factors that just got released toward the end of the year. Inflation at like 2.6, 2.7, a lot lower than everybody predicted. And then you had the U.S. GDP come in way higher than everybody expected, like significantly higher, and kind of shocked everybody. Now, I don't know if it was that shocking to a lot of the people who are looking at charts and actually looking at the numbers, but anybody who is just listening to the news and listening to media and following you know, their CNBCs and watching the Kramers of the world talk about the Jim Kramers of the world talking about what the markets are doing.
Uh-huh.
They were a little shocked because all they sell is bad news, and they have a tendency to tell us all the things that are wrong. Well, like Tom Ellsworth says on PBD, who we love so much, biz doc, he always says, words talk, numbers scream.
Mm-hmm.
And the numbers are coming out and saying, hey, listen, this economy is doing pretty good. GDP is stronger, way stronger than anybody anticipated.
Mm-hmm.
Inflation is lower than people were predicting. And mm-hmm. so those are some good things for the overall economy. This recession that everybody's been waiting for seems to be even mm-hmm. further away from it than we thought we were, right? Wow. That we've been told we were for a long period of time. Mm. And so I think a lot of the policies that have been put in place are working. Now, is the administration perfect? Absolutely not. Right. Did they do 100% of the things they told us they were going to do? Absolutely not.
Right.
Did they have some hiccups? Yes. And so, but overall, the economy is doing pretty dang good, which means the housing market, in my opinion, in 2026 is poised for a really good year. Wow. And so I think that we're in, I think rates are going to come down. I think that the base rate should probably stabilize. I think it's at like 3.75 right now. I don't think it should get below 3. And that's not mortgage interest rates. That's the base, the base interest rate. When Jerome Powell or the Fed comes out and says, we're making a 50 basis point cut, it's on the base rate. Right.
Okay.
And so, you know, if we can get that in that, you know, the low threes, or I don't think it should probably go below 3 because now the banks can't make a lot of money. And so we want the banks to be able to still be making money, have competitive products, because then they will make better products for us as a consumer.
Mm.
We'll have better loan products, but we're not going to have, you know, these crazy corrupt type loan products that we saw in 2006 and 8 because the base rate was near zero. And they're like, hey, we're not making any money unless we're taking some big risks, right?
Okay.
And so they come up with these really risky type of products, which is all the subprime stuff that came out, the no doc stuff and all that stuff.
Yeah.
So we want to still have a healthy potential for profits for the banks because that in turn incentivizes them to give us better loan products as a consumer.
Mm.
But also, it needs to be low enough interest rates that we are incentivized to come into the market, invest in the market, take the risks in the market, and be able to still get a good return on that as far as in our world, real estate, on the rents that we're able to collect. And in our, you know, in the short-term rental world, on the we're charging on a nightly rate.
Mm. Okay. So you're thinking housing costs will probably stay where it's at, maybe go up a little bit.
I think housing costs are, I think you're going to start to see that stagnation is going to go away. I think the housing costs are actually going to start to go up.
Even more. Wow. Yeah, interesting.
I think rates are going to come down.
Uh-huh.
Affordability comes down. When affordability comes down, naturally buyers go into the market.
Right.
We still have an inventory problem. We still have a supply problem. And that's going to be one of the problems, in my opinion, in the housing market in 2026 is that when that stuff starts to stack in our favor as buyers, there's still an inventory problem. And that means that rates are going to, and prices are going to continue to go up. And
interesting.
So I do think that prices are going to go up on housing. Yeah.
Interesting.
I think that it's, I think that they're being smart about it by lowering the rates slowly, so that they don't just skyrocket.
Right.
But I think you're going to start to see prices go up again.
Interesting.
You know, they've been, when you look at those charts, you see the little stops and the gaps and the, we've been in kind of a stop gap for 2 or 3 years now.
Mm.
And you're going to start to, in my opinion, start to see that go back up again.
Mm, wow. Wow. Okay. That was our first one. Housing costs, interest rates. I love it. Let's just keep moving. We've got a lot of stuff here. Now, I love this one. I got some stuff to read. I'm very excited about this one.
All right.
Vacation traveling costs. I want to throw two things out at you. I got two articles here. First one, let's go with this. The average cost of a vacation, this one I believe was, September 29th, 2025 is when this article came out. The average cost of a vacation in 2025 is $7,249. The average cost of a vacation is projected to be $7,249 in 2025, according to travel insurance provider Squaremouth. That's an 11% increase from 2024 and more than double the average vacation cost in 2022. Amazing number. Love that. I love hearing that, right? Then we go to this other article, News Graphic. This one came out, I believe, here in December, I think the 23rd. 76% of travelers said they're confident they'll travel more in 2026, and 38% said more people traveled in 2025 than 2024. That's music to my ears in a way. The cost of travel is going up, and yet even more people are going to go travel through. Isn't that amazing? Isn't that fantastic?
And we've been saying this and seeing this and seeing these same numbers for a long time, mm-hmm. right? I host a webinar, weekly webinar that we get on, and we talk about the markets and we talk about the projected mm-hmm. growth in the, we look at the real estate markets in general. We look at the travel industry markets mm-hmm. and the short-term rental market specifically. Mm-hmm. And most of the projections that we're seeing across the board for the last, really since 2023, when we started pulling these reports, mm-hmm. they're averaging anywhere between 9.5% to about 11.5% every single year, saying, wow. hey, listen, we're seeing this, the consumer spending 9.5% to 11.5% more every single year mm-hmm. in the travel industry on short-term mm-hmm. rentals. So mm-hmm. the market continues to grow. The consumer demand continues to grow. Mm-hmm. And it's one of those things that we look and everybody's like, well, how can this keep going up like this? Well, the mm-hmm. consumer is resilient. The consumer is saying, yeah. hey, listen, we're yeah. willing to spend the money here. Mm-hmm. You know, we've got the largest economy in the world by far. Mm-hmm. I mean, the most robust economy in the world by far. Mm-hmm. And the consumer is saying, hey, listen, this is a sector that we like spending our money on. Right. And so not right. only are they spending more money and we're seeing that they're spending more money, mm-hmm. they're also saying that, yes, they plan to continue to spend more money and they plan to continue to travel more. And so that is why we get so excited about yeah. the long-term aspects of this game of short-term mm-hmm. rentals. When I started short-term rentals back in 2006, mm-hmm. and really it started gaining steam, like it was not really mainstream, but like 2014, 15-ish, mm-hmm. we started to see a pretty nice uptick mm-hmm. till, you know, and then obviously COVID happened, right. added right. fuel to the fire, and it just became mainstream overnight. Mm-hmm. Well, it's proving to not be a flash in the pan asset class.
Right.
The consumer is saying, right. hey, we like these. We mm-hmm. like this type of an accommodation. Mm-hmm. We like to be able to go, mm-hmm. you know, check out new areas and have whole homes to stay in and these types mm-hmm. of things. And the consumer continues to say on all of these reports and all these different surveys that you see, mm-hmm. not only are the numbers showing that they're spending more, but they're saying, yeah, we plan to spend more.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, 76% of people are saying they're going to travel more in 2026 than they're yeah. than they traveled in 2025. Yeah. Yet 38% of people also traveled more in 2025 than they did in 2024.
Right.
It's, you know, those are all really good numbers for us to see
yeah.
if we're investors in the game. Yeah. Now, if you're a traveler
yeah.
and the cost is going up significantly every single year, that's not always great, right? You need to be able to say, hey, listen, how do I travel for free? How do I own some of these assets where people are paying us some of that money and supplement our lifestyle if we do like to travel. Mm. All of those different things are things we navigate when we invest in short-term rentals.
Mm. Man, that is so, it's so exciting to me. I mean, even if they say like, oh, this vacationing is really expensive. Well, it seems year over year, they continue to pay it and they don't have a problem paying with it. Actually, more people are willing to pay it, especially with the unique personalized experience. It's fantastic
yeah.
news.
Yeah.
All right, let's go into this. So some people may go, oh, maybe that's just other kinds of vacationing like hotels, and maybe that's not with Airbnbs or short-term rentals or whatever. So let's look at Airbnbs. Let's look at the results. Yeah. They publicly said their results here. Let's look at Q1. Let's start here of 2025. We had a strong start to 2025. In Q1, guests spent nearly $25 billion on Airbnb.
On Airbnb alone.
On Airbnb
alone. One quarter in 2025. That's a lot of money.
Dude, that's so much. Our results, I love this line. Our results show that no matter what's happening in the world, people continue to choose Airbnb. Fantastic. Looks like they had a 6% year over year. Oh, you go, oh, maybe that was a hot quarter. They haven't released Q4 yet, so we have Q3. Let's see what they say here. Let's scroll up to the top here. Q3. Q3 2025 was another strong quarter for Airbnb. Revenue increased 10% year over year. Dude, yeah. So no matter what,
it's just matching the numbers we're seeing across the board. And it doesn't matter whether you're just looking at Airbnb,
yeah.
if you're looking at reports of the entire industry, if you're looking at surveys that are happening, mm. we're seeing that 9 to 11% growth rate year over year yeah. on not only the projections, but we're seeing it on actuals as well. When mm-hmm. we look back and we say, how much is it going up year over year? And we're seeing that steady right. growth of around 10% a year. That's a lot Dude. Of money. And when that dollar keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger, yeah. 10% of that big number is a really big number of growth. Mm-hmm. And so
$25 billion. in a one quarter is crazy work. That's amazing. That's that's music to our ears. To people, listeners who already have a property knowing, hey, man, people are spending money. All right, let's jump into our next point here. Now, this is really interesting. Let's kind of transition here. Will people sell their short-term rental or buy into it more? So we see, we hear these numbers, and some people, they're super excited. They want to jump into it. But then the other people, they have their Airbnb or short-term rental, and it, maybe it's not working out, so we're curious. Will they sell them? So I found this AirDNA, and now this is something that's really interesting to me. 65% of survey respondents would consider a short-term rental investment in the near future. Now, I wanted to get your opinion on this. I mean, look at, if we look at this picture, I'll have it up if you're watching, but it says about 26% are very unlikely. You got about 23-24% are neutral about buying one, but then you have about 28% are very likely. It seems like you either love it or you hate it, in my opinion. And some people, of course, are neutral about it because of, you know, whatever. But why do you think there's such a hate or a love for it?
Well, and I would love to see, like, this is saying, hey, 65% would consider an STR in the future. That doesn't seem like that's true based on that. That says 28% is very likely. And then what is that about? 12% is likely.
Yeah.
So that, you know, that's basically saying, you know, you've got 40% of people saying, yeah, they're likely going to do something in the next. So I guess some of those neutral ones are saying they might consider. But on the flip side, the numbers are almost equal to saying, no, I don't have any plans of doing this. And I would love to see a survey of current short-term rental owners.
Okay.
Because what we see based on our experience, and like I said, we talk to hundreds of people, thousands of people every single year. And on a weekly basis, we do our webinars. One of our webinars is how to maximize an existing portfolio that we run consistently. And we have people on there, and there's a lot of people on there saying, hey, listen, this is not the game I thought I was going to play. I'm not doing nearly as good as I thought I was going to do. I want to get out of this property.
Right.
And so even if they're in, and we're just saying, hey, listen, this short-term rental market is awesome and lots of money being spent, lots of opportunity in there, you have a lot of people that are not doing really well. And there is a lot of truth to the Airbnb bust headlines. And like, I know bad news sells, and I know you read a lot of that, but overall, based on our involvement in this industry, as many stages as we speak on, as many webinars as we host, as many people as we coach and we talk to, I feel like we have a pretty good finger on the pulse of what's going on out there. And I think that you're always going to have almost as many people that are wanting to get out of the game as there are wanting to get into the game. And only probably 10 to 15% of the people getting in are going to do it correctly. And that is why 80% of the people want to get out, is because only about 10 to 15% of the people are actually doing it well in the first place.
Yeah.
We say this is a game of the haves and the have-nots. The people, and I'm not talking about, it ultimately ends up being the haves to get paid more and they make more money.
Yeah.
But it's having the right properties, having the right experience, understanding the marketing, having the right knowledge and how to articulate that experience and property that you have, so that you actually are operating at the top of these markets. So I also think, because it's a mom and pop business, and which means it's, you don't have a lot of real smart money in there, big institutional investors with big teams and marketing plans and analytics and everything else. You have average everyday Americans who buy a vacation home. They think they know what they're doing. They buy a really good property in a nice area. They throw it on Airbnb and they're like, holy crap, I'm not making anywhere near the money I thought I was going to make, because they didn't take the time to understand the game they were playing. And when you don't take the time to understand the game you're playing, you can't understand how to win that game, right? How to play to win, right? And so the people who do that have this huge, we say, an unfair advantage. We help people build those unfair advantages. So you're always going to have people exiting out of this game. One of the things that we use as kind of an opportunity, if you're listening and you have a property you want to get rid of, call us. We use that because we buy a lot of those properties. We look at a lot of those properties. We have them talk to our acquisitions manager, and he puts them as pre-vetted properties. And there are a lot of times properties that were on the market as short-term rentals, not doing the right thing, but they had all the potential in the world. They were 90% there. They didn't know the last 10% of the stuff they had to do, and they want to get out of the game. They're done with it. They're saying, hey, listen, you know, you can talk all you want, Sean and Jake, about this short-term rental market. You say it's great. I've lived it, and it's not that great.
Right.
And that's because they want to blame the market. They want to blame that this isn't the game that they were sold or whatever, right? And they don't look in the mirror and say, what could I have done to learn the market, to learn how to play the game,
right,
to learn the skills that is necessary to win the game. And so you'll also have a lot of those people that are saying, hey, listen, yeah, I'm likely to buy a property. My, you know, my encouragement or my advice to those people that are going to get in to say, learn how to do it right.
Yeah.
Learn how to raise the bar so that you can operate at the top of these markets, because it's a pretty fun game to play. Yeah. The consumer is spending a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
The consumer wants us to create these great experiences. They want to pay us more money, but we have to give them a reason to, right? And we have to do it right. So I think in 2026, which is what we kind of saw in 2025, you have equal number of people entering, equal number of people exiting out, and it starts to become a very stabilized market, very mainstream market, high supply, high demand, and neither one of that gap is not going to really get that wide, right? And so when we saw the spike in 2020, it was because we had this wide gap between supply and demand. Lots of people wanted to rent short-term rentals. There wasn't enough of them on the market.
Right.
We had a spike in supply. Demand keeps going up, but supply is going to continue to stay up with demand. And so that's where it's going to say, hey, listen, in any mature market that has an equal supply and demand, and you don't have a wide gap either way, then you all of a sudden, the top properties are going to make the money. You know, it's the Pareto principle saying, you know, the top 20% of the properties are going to make 80% of the money. I think it's even more skewed to about 90-10 in our world. But that's saying you better understand how to play the game if you want to make any money.
Okay, say I'm one of those properties that's not making the amount of money that I wanted, right? And then I'm listening to this and I hear, okay, so people are going to spend a lot of money in 2026. Is the advice to kind of to bunker down? I know the answer, so it seems like a stupid question, but I'm just going to ask it in case they're listening and wondering, should I bunker down and just hope that people will spend more money at my property? Or what should I do? Should I just sell and get out because I know they're going to spend money on the other properties like they have in the past? Or what should those people do?
You need to figure out why you're not making money right now. Why are you not getting your unfair share of business right now? Because we said that the market is going to continue to grow, the market has been growing. The whole time you've been in it, that you're struggling, it's been going up. The consumer's spending more money than they were yesterday. And it has been, they've been doing that since 2020.
Yeah.
I mean, it's been going up every single year. So if you're not getting your unfair share of business, you do not bunker down. You do not say, hey, listen, I'm going to wait for this demand to come to me. That does not work, and it's not going to work because people like us will crush you in the market because we do give the consumer a reason to book us be above and beyond your property. And so you're probably a lot closer to success than you think. And here's the thing that I get frustrated with.
Okay.
I do audits on properties all the time. Every single week, people get on my calendar, I do property audits, and we look at the money that they're leaving on the table. And it's shocking to most people because most people don't even have a clue. They know that they're not paying their mortgage payment. They know that they're not maybe doing as well, but they don't know how well they could do. They don't know what the consumer's willing to spend in their market on their type of property. And then, but then also, so we show them that and we'll say, let's say I just did one. So it's fresh on my mind.
Okay.
We have a property that we did an audit on and the consumer is leaving about $40,000 a year on the table. In revenue, like realistically, like the top properties, if he was going to compete in the top of the market, he'd be leaving almost $70,000 a year on the table.
Wow.
We're saying, hey, listen, based on a few different things, based on what you're willing to do, we suggest you do this, this, and this. There's three things we suggested he do, and you're leaving about $40,000 a year on the table. The three things we suggested that he do was going to cost about $25,000. So,
dude.
$25,000 to spend.
Right.
And one of them was an amenity. We were going to do some backyard renovations. Mm-hmm. We were going to do some customized artwork and we were going to do a really great photo shoot. It was going to cost him about $25,000 to do those three things. He had a great property, great proximity to the beach. It was in a beach market. I mean, right there on the beach, really, really competitive as far as proximity, property, very nice remodel when he bought it, spent a lot of money on a remodel, had some really nice furnishings, just didn't finish. And so, we said 25 grand, 40 on the table. We start with the numbers though, because I want to know how, because what if I say, before I even look at what you can do to improve, what if you're only leaving $5,000 on the table?
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
And then I say, okay, it's going to cost you 25 grand to go capture that extra five. You're not even getting paid back for 5 years on that investment. So we're seeing there's $40,000 conservatively leaving on the table every year. It's going to take you a $25,000 investment. If I came to you and said, hey, if you want to give a $25,000 investment and you can make $40,000 a year every single year off of that, I mean, you're getting paid back in 8 months, 9 months. You're 100% paid back on your money. You're playing on house money and before the year is over, and that continues to grow from then on, right? So
cost agate.
We're not even talking about any of that. I'm just saying. Just do what it takes to get your unfair share of business. Get the consumer to book your property above everybody else. Right now, you're underperforming.
Yeah.
And well, I shouldn't say underperforming. He's performing exactly how he's set up to perform. Mm-hmm. And I don't believe properties underperform because there are things he needs to do to improve. Right. Mm-hmm. So we identify the improvements. This happens all the time. This is where I get really frustrated. Is property owners look at that and say, I'm already not making money, so I'm just going to kind of see how it goes. I'm going to wait it out, and I'm not going to spend that extra money to gain the extra money. So my advice is sell the property. You have a property, a nice asset. It's gone up in value. It's not the game you should be playing or want to play because you're going to just kind of bounce along the bottom. It's going to be very frustrating. Mm. It's kind of the death by a thousand cuts, right? It's like you're just bleeding every single month. And it gets worse and worse and worse. It's not going to your point in the very beginning of this question was, should I hunker down and wait for that demand to come to me? It's not going to. Right. You have to give that money a reason to come to you. Mm. And those reasons, if you're not willing to do those reasons, you're not going to get that extra demand. Right. You're not going to get those extra dollars spent on your property.
Mm.
Somebody else who is willing to do that is going to get those extra dollars spent with them. Mm. And so if you do have a property, just because the outlook looks really, really good for the short-term rental market, you still have to make decisions and take action to get your unfair share of that money because it is not doled out fair. It's why you never hear me talk about RevPAR. Right. How many other people talk about RevPAR going up or going down? That's just your fair share of business. Mm-hmm. That's saying, hey, listen, there's this much money being spent. There's this many properties. Let's divide it together. We'll divide how many properties into the total dollars being spent, and that's how much everybody's making.
No.
Their fair share of business. Markets don't work like that.
No.
So why do we even look at that? Right. Why do we even talk about that in the short-term rental game? Our markets don't work like that at all. RevPAR is way more applicable to other asset classes than our short-term rental asset class.
Wow. Man, I got to write some stuff down. Okay. Now, this is interesting. I loved all that. I want to hit on this. This is a little bit older right here, but it says, from 2010 to 2019, the average amount spent on vacation lodging grew by 101%. That's on, like, what, 10, 11% year over year? We've seen that with
same. It's very same consistent.
Thing. It's very consistent across the board. From 2010 to 2025, we've seen it. It continues to grow every time. So I just wanted to bounce that point off what you're going with there. That's amazing. I love it.
Yeah.
All right, let's go into some more opinionated things here.
I better make my answers less.
Dude, less I love long-winded. It. No, this is literally my favorite episode of the year. I love doing predictions.
So we'll go longer if we have to.
I love it.
All right.
All right, so this one is based off seasons. Just what I'm seeing here in Utah, it seems like, you know, this is my year and a half living here. It seems like the seasons have almost shifted by about 30 days. It seems like it's taking a little bit longer for the snow and for things like that. So do you think going into 2026, this is something that people should take into account? Of course, we're not forecasters, weathermen here, but do you think maybe this could be something new people should be looking for? You know, maybe your peak season will be maybe about 30 days
different. Well, when it comes to snow in particular, ski markets, I do think, I've lived here my whole life, I feel like I used to always see snow by Thanksgiving. Ski resorts would try to open up by Thanksgiving. You know, then you had a really nice Christmas season, and then you'd have, you know, January, February. Mm-hmm. By March, you were starting to get like spring skiing, right? Mm-hmm. And it was starting to, you know, April, you're ready for the flowers and to melt off and the mud season to start coming in. I feel like it's shifted where we don't really start getting snow now until December.
Right.
So instead of November coming, it starts in December, but it lasts. Like, we're still skiing in April, right? Mm-hmm. There's a lot of resorts that are, their closing day is like April 14th.
Wow.
And it seems like every year they're getting extended out because it feels like that season kind of shifted a little bit. Mm-hmm. So does that affect your holiday bookings? Yeah. In some of these ski markets, you know, if people are coming in for the holidays to ski.
Yeah.
This year was really cool. Like, it was really
cool. Wild.
I mean, it was
wild.
Yeah, this is a little odd for the year, but even then, I do think it shifted a little bit to where it's mostly, you know, man-made snow and those types of things. I don't think that we have these properties 12 months of the year. Mm-hmm. And so we have to identify when those peaks are going to be. many times in ski type markets where it's dependent on snow conditions and how much snow and everything else. A lot of times those are last minute. They're the last minute bookings. And so you have to very much navigate your pricing, your calendar, based on some of those things. I mean, smart hosts in ski markets are probably raising those, jumping those rates based on storm cycles and some of that, because you're going to have a spike in demand when you see those big storms roll through, because everybody wants to ski the deep powder and everybody wants to ski the new snow. And so, but that's very short term. I mean, half the time you got to look outside and see what the weather looks like. That's my weather app anymore, because I don't, I feel like you can't trust any weather apps.
It's wild.
But those, so it becomes very, like short term revenue management in certain ski markets. Now, if you don't want to get that crazy with it, you know, you're just looking at your holiday weekends, your ski weekends that people are naturally going to be coming in, and they're just kind of saying, hey, listen, we're hoping it's going to be really good, but we're coming anyways, right? And so there are certain weekends that are big ski weekends. President's Day weekend, for example, is a big ski weekend, because it's right smack dab in the middle of the winter, right? And it's a longer weekend. You're likely to have pretty good snow conditions mid to end of February in most of the Western ski markets. And so there's certain weekends that you know that you're going to get probably longer term bookings out. But a lot of times those short term ones, you can navigate your revenue management pretty well based on storm cycles. And so, you know, and that's, you know, when it comes to seasonality, most of our markets are seasonal. That, you know, your beach markets aren't nearly as affected because the temperatures don't seem to fluctuate as much as the precipitation, right? And so we've had, now I say that, and this year we've actually had a decent amount of precipitation. It just hasn't been snow because it's been so warm.
Wow. Okay. That answers my question about pushing it back, but also just, you got to watch it. Maybe this is an odd year or something. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So that's a good one. Let's jump into this. We've seen this one a couple times here on people reaching out to us, and they're curious about maybe getting a short-term rental in Costa Rica, right? Or they want to go somewhere across the pond, Italy, France. We've seen these before. Do you think that's a new frontier going into 2026? Do you think a lot more people will try and buy outside of these other places, or do you think it'll mainly stay here in the U.S.?
First, it's always been an option, right? Short-term rentals became mainstream over in Europe before they were over here in the U.S. So they've been very popular across the pond, for example. Do I think it's a new frontier? No, I do not.
Okay.
The ownership rights, the lending options, when you're a non-citizen of a lot of those countries, it's navigating them is, you know, they're we have international investors in our Vodacy family, you know, a decent number of them because of our size, but not a decent percentage of our overall ownership, right? And so there's a lot of challenges when you go invest outside of your, you know, where you live, as far as your citizenship. You know, there's property ownership rights are not the same as they are here in the U.S. everywhere. Second part, why I don't think it's the new frontier, is we are the largest, most robust economy in the world. So the U.S. consumer spends a lot of money in the U.S. International consumers spend a lot of money in the U.S. And so, you know, I know what my ownership rights are in the U.S. I know my lending options. I get very comfortable with being able to operate a business here in the U.S. as a citizen. And so I don't see it as a new frontier to go outside of the U.S.
Right.
You'll probably never see me own international properties. Not to say you shouldn't. I'm just saying I don't see it as a better opportunity than what I see personally here in the U.S. And so both from the ownership rights aspect of it, but also the demand aspect. I mean, it's where the majority of the money is spent in the world. And I mean, it's the largest economy in the world. And, you know, and so you've got, you know, there's a lot of people that spend money here, just U.S. citizens, but there's a lot of international people that spend money here as well.
Yeah.
And so, I think that I don't see it as a new frontier. I see it as an option. What we do is universal. The underwriting that we, in fact, the underwriting AirDNA was based in Barcelona. I mean, they were started over in Europe, and, you know, they're a global company now. And you can do analytics in global markets, and all of that is great. But, you know, when you start to navigate outside of your country of origin and citizenship, your property ownership rights in those countries, even if you are a citizen in some of those countries, is not great. Mm-hmm. And I think people forget about that. It's like, man, well, yeah, I can go buy some beachfront property, you know, in a different country for a fraction of what I can buy it in the US. Well, you might be able to, but you're paying cash and you might not own it. The government might have their hands in a lot of the stuff. You know, you might just be leasing the land from the government. There's a lot of different things that you have to navigate when you go buy properties internationally. So, and all that aside, let's say all that was equal. I just show me somewhere that people are spending as much money as they do in the U.S. And as many options as we have in the U.S. and if to drivable destinations, backyard resort destinations that you don't have to fly to that do well in almost every economy. And so I think that for me, the opportunity is right here in our backyard.
And now I'm thinking about the target audience as well. Like how, if you're an American, how well are you going to communicate to an Italian? You know what I'm saying?
Right.
I mean,
and maybe your target audience is Americans visiting Italy.
Right.
Right. Maybe, maybe you have to run down that road. Right.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's, obviously you're probably going to hire professionals over there.
It's going to be a lot.
And so you're navigating, different cultural aspects of business and dealing with like all the different things that you have to deal with. All that can be done. Like it's perfectly fine. We have, like I said, we have a lot of international investors. We help a lot of our members invest internationally when it comes to underwriting, setting up a unique experience, marketing those properties. All of that is done universally. We do the exact same thing over there as we would here or anywhere that we would do here. But we don't, your lending options and your property ownership rights are going to be different in a lot of different areas. And that might dictate whether you want to be owning over in some of those areas.
Right. Okay. Makes sense. Let's go into our next prediction here. AI and the automation. Well, do you think it's going to cut out a lot of property managers? Do you think AI will? Of course, there's a human aspect. And I think we've debated this. I feel like we've talked about this before.
Yeah.
But will, you know, maybe some people are seeing that and they're a little worried. Man, I'm a property manager. I got X amount of properties. Do you think AI will come in and start to take their jobs? Or do you think, I mean, I would honestly also say no. I think that they'll start to use AI and automation more.
Absolutely.
But I don't think it's going to take their jobs.
No,
is that what
they're,
you think?
They're not. I don't think it's going to take their job. We're in a very personalized type of a business. Look at how many, Kenny Bedwell, we've talked about him a couple times, and he had a post over Christmas. And it was a pretty funny post. It showed a whole bunch of Christmas, like ugly sweaters, and it was made for the Airbnb host. And it was like, you know, I bought into passive income and all I did was buy myself a second job. And it was targeted to the self-managers and how big of a role they have to have. As much as automation is in there, as many property management software solutions, the AI, the chatbots that are connected, these hosts are still very, very involved in the running of their business,
right?
Why I don't manage my own properties. Like I laughed at it thinking, yeah, you bought into the wrong, like I still don't understand why people can still have passive income investments with short-term rentals in the same sentence that they tell people to self-manage. And it's crazy to me, but his post was funny. And then the comments were even funnier because all the people were like, oh man, this is so true. I spent so much time on this. I bought into thinking I was buying a passive investment and all I had was a second job. Like it's the way they set him up, right?
Right.
The point of that is it's a very personalized, high touch type of a business. And you can only automate so much. AI can only help with so much. And it can do an amazing job of making you more efficient and better at the things that are repetitive, the better delivering the things that you have to do every single time, right? And all of those things are going to be great for AI.
Right.
So I think it could help property managers become more efficient. But at some point, you got to talk to people. You got to communicate with people.
Right.
And I promise you, when we are trying to raise the bar and we have a better experience than everybody else, part of that experience is personalization.
Right.
It's saying, hey, listen, we are here for you. Here is my cell phone. Here's how we can chat. How, you know, we live in the area if you need anything. And I say we collectively, I'm saying the people I hire to do mine. I don't manage my properties. I don't do any of that stuff because I actually do want a passive investment. I actually do want a passive income portfolio. And so, but having that manager in place, we lean into the fact that it's personalized because as a consumer, I would much rather talk to somebody than a machine, right? And so the AI, I do not think, I think that some people will try to do that and they'll say, hey, listen, I can operate this business on my laptop. Right. I can automate everything.
Right.
The answer to that is yes, you can. Doesn't mean you're actually maximizing your asset. It doesn't mean you're maximizing your profit potential because again, when we are consumers will pay for unique personalized service. And so if I can give them something different than what you have to offer and I can personalize it and they know it's personalized, people are willing to pay for that. They'll pay more for that than they will for something that is AI automated.
And I think the communication aspect of people, I mean, at this stage in the game, I don't know how it'll be in 10 years, but at this stage in the game, you can tell when you're reading something AI, or you can tell when it's, there's
every
not a human.
Every email that's written now is basically AI. I mean, you can totally tell, like, and you can tell what AI, like most people that, that have used AI, you can tell whether it came off ChatGPT, whether it came from Grok, whether it came from Claude, wherever you can, you like, you can actually tell where it came from.
Right.
And the issue with that is everybody has just got this, everything, everybody's pulling the same information and regurgitating the same stuff. Right. And so it's, it, you know, ultimately the consumer, when everything's the same, guess what? It's just a commodity.
Right.
You know, and the information is becoming a commodity anymore. It's why I say to everybody, don't pay for a, like a curriculum. Don't pay for information. Don't pay for coaching as far as like information. Pay for implementation. Pay for execution. So when you hire me as a coach, for example, I'll give you anything we have. You can see any of the resources that we have, the curriculum that we have.
Right.
We'll give you that. You don't have to pay for any of that stuff.
Right.
People pay us to help them execute all that.
Right.
They pay us to make sure that, hey, listen, when I'm taking these actions, I want somebody that's been in this game for 20 years in my corner. And so that we can go down and run down this road because we've seen the issues that arise from following certain blueprints, following certain, you know, plans of execution. And we've done it.
Right.
And so you don't pay for the information. It drives me nuts anymore. We used to. We used to sell information, right? Back when the coaching businesses all started, you'd pay for your masterclass and your blueprint, and people would pay for all that stuff. That stuff is just available now, right? The information is all out there.
Right.
And it's been regurgitated so many times. Our masterclass has been put out there on ChatGPT so many times. I don't even know, can't even count. People have loaded it in there. You can go get all that stuff. But all these things that we talk about on a regular basis, you, if you've never done it before, you know, you're going to struggle. You, I could lay in front of you the best blueprints to build a house that have ever been drawn up. And I could hand it to you and it shows you to the detail of every single screw and nail and the type and the kind that you need, where to put it. You're still going to struggle building a house. And so that's how the information is kind of, right?
It would take me so much longer too.
It's like, hey, listen, so you pay for execution, you pay to accelerate your progress. And so I know that that wasn't, I don't know how I got off on that tangent, but the point of that is to say, don't pay, like before you pay anybody anything, look on the back end, go look at the curriculum, go see what you're getting into, look at the blueprint, say, is this something I think I'm going to execute on? I think we started talking about it on AI and how much time this business takes. And if somebody's like, hey, I've got the best thing since sliced bread and we're making all this money, go look at what they're teaching you to do. And if part of that is, hey, listen, you're going to do this, this, and this, and then you've got to create a second job and you have a full-time job already. Maybe you don't want a second job, right? And most of them out there are going to teach you to self-manage because they're going to say, oh, yeah, you can automate everything. But the problem is, going back to the automation, you can. Yes, you can. AI's there. The property management software systems are there to make your life easier. You have to know what to automate and what not to automate because the what not to automate is what actually gets you paid more money than somebody else. And if you don't know those answers, right, those are the harder things of why people pay for mentors and coaches and to be around other people that are operating at a high level so they can, the devil's in the details. They can find out those little details to maximize their successes.
I think just the communication style is really crucial. If I'm talking to anything, I'd much rather talk to a person, especially when trouble arises. No matter if like something happens and I message them and it's just an AI that gets back to me, I would rather have a human. And I think that's a huge person or a huge thing for people if they're wanting to communicate with an actual person. I think that that's going to be a way that you can really help excel or be different. I think it will be huge.
It's 100% a differentiating aspect to be able to personalize and be unique and available for people. Be a 24/7 concierge. Not everybody wants to do that. If you're self-managing, that doesn't sound really great to be available 24/7, right?
Right.
But if you're in the business of managing properties, like it's one of the things I look for when I hire my managers to say, listen, are you available? And is this a person that's available? I don't want automated messages always because we're going to lean into that and we're going to charge more for that. Now, do I pay more for that? Yes. Mm-hmm. I'm not hiring the 10% property managers. I'm paying 30% property management fees, but they're going to do certain things at a very high level. And part of that is going to take them more time. So they should make more money.
Right. I'm totally with you. I love it. I want to go into our next point here. Okay. We have, this is for the big dog. What are the big players going to do? And I wanted to read this. This is a little long, so stay with me here, but here we go. This is from the Q3 report on Airbnb. Once again, we're going back to it. And this is what it says. We're expanding what we offer. This is what it says. In May, we took the first step in expanding Airbnb beyond stays with the launch of Airbnb services and reimagined Airbnb experiences. We actually had an episode on that, a couple of videos down. Go watch it. Since launch, feedback from guests has been overwhelmingly positive, with services and experiences receiving an average rating of 4.93 out of 5 stars. They received over 110,000 applications for potential services and experience hosts. That's been fantastic. So they're telling you they're going to lean into this. At the same time, we're continuing to roll out new features that make these offerings even better, starting with social features aimed at bringing people together in the real world. First, before guests book on an Airbnb experience, we'll show them who else is going and where they're from. Number two, guests can now request to directly message other guests they meet during an experience to keep in touch or plan their next experience right in the app. Number three, in the connections section of the Airbnb profile tab, guests can see the people they've met on experiences, so it's easy to reconnect. This tells me if I'm an Airbnb host and I offer one of these experiences or one of these services, I need to make sure all of the people have an outstanding time. Yeah. I mean, this could be a new thing where maybe all these people book separately, right? But then they come together, they have this amazing experience, they connect through the Airbnb app because this is what they're going to be pushing now. And now this becomes maybe a yearly thing. All these people, I remember Brad and Tony and their two wives, they met on this and now, hey man, let's go back next year. And this could be a great way to build it. This seems to be huge in my opinion that everyone across the board, I mean, you have to be hitting a grand slam, it seems like, each time on this.
Yeah, well, one... We've always said we're in the experience business. We are not in the real estate business. We're in the experience business. Well, Airbnb is starting to realize that's the case. And so back in May, they came out with the experiences and the unique, like the...
experiences and services.
Yeah, services. With services and experiences. And when you go into some of the things that they're... What's coming and what's going on right now is... They're saying, hey, listen, this experience thing is kind of taking off. Like people like this.
Right.
They also are realizing that there's probably a wide open market, and I would agree with them, to start to bring people together face to face again, right? So they're becoming kind of a social platform that is a face to face type of a social platform. Like, hey, listen, you're going to book these experiences with other people. Guess what? You get to communicate with other people. You get to look them in the eye. You get to have conversations. Mm-hmm. And it's not everything online, right?
Right.
And so I think that it's a very interesting play to say, hey, listen, we're going to, like, we know that we've got this platform. The user base is interested in experiences because that's what we're really selling on Airbnb. And our top properties are all revolving around experiences. So now we're going to actually expand and allow service providers, experience providers. Don't even have to have a house. You can go on, you can give a tour, a horseback ride, whatever, right? And people can come. And then they get to see who they're going to be hanging out with, and they can start to build those relationships, and they can start to build them online. They take it offline, they go hang out together. And then they, like you said, they hopefully, you know, create some relationships and kind of move on from there. So yeah, it's very interesting to see Airbnb lean into this and I think it's going to become very much a social platform that tries to bring people together. And, you know, I don't fault them for that. I think that, you know, the anxious generation that they call it, all the kids and people that are growing up with you know, zero face-to-face relationships. Everything's online. Everything's sitting on, you know, an app or a game or, you know, something like they're sitting in a basement and just, you know, I just picture kids sitting in their basement with their headphones on and their video games out, right? And, but this, in my opinion, is an attempt to say, hey, listen, there might be a big market for this because the pendulum swung so far one way. Let's bring it back to where like you actually have some social interaction. You're hanging out with people. And I think that's why you're seeing some good success with it. And so, you know, people are enjoying it. And so we'll, the jury's out to see how it'll catch fire long-term, but I can see why they're doing it. And they've already got a user base that's interested at least at a high level into an experience because they're booking the travel, which travel revolves around experiences. And they're taking that next step and leaning into helping service providers and other unique experience providers, a platform to get in front of their customer base.
Okay, this is what I'm thinking. This was also episode 285. We talk about the services and experiences. Go check it out, episode 285. Yes. This is I'm thinking, okay, so if you are doing one of these, if you have a Airbnb service or experience, you got to be taking tons of pictures, in my opinion, for these people. I mean, when they all come, if you have like a cooking class experience, man, you need group photos each time.
Yeah, photographers should probably be there.
You need people to remember this and connect. And now that it also seems like transparency is going to be a huge thing. The key word for me is transparency here. If I'm on Airbnb, I can message other people, hey, did you have a good time at this experience before I booked this experience? I can be transparent with the reviews now. I can give you a rating on your cleanliness and all these other things. I mean, transparency is going to be huge. Now, my question is, say I have a short-term rental. Do you think it's wise for me to try and create an experience?
Yes.
Okay.
So keep going. I might cut you off.
I have a property in Georgia, right? And I got some land. Should I now try and do horseback riding? Should one of my amenities now be, or, you know, I buy some horses and now that's what you can add on this experience of, we'll take you horseback riding through the trails of the mountains. Should I do that? Or should I let those people do the experience and I just lean into my property?
Yeah. I personally, that's what I would do unless that was right up my alley.
Right.
And I wanted to be a part of that, you know, kind of the service provider, if you will. And that was something that we were interested in. We thought we'd be good at, might be an extra revenue stream. I would lean into partnering with some of those. We've always had concierge services at properties.
Right.
And we partner with other people that maybe can be private chefs, massages, stocking kitchens, maybe horseback rides, maybe, you know, RV rentals, as far as ATVs or boats or something like that. So we usually try to partner with those type of service providers, experience providers. Now they've actually got a platform on Airbnb just to do it right through there. Versus we used to do it as kind of a concierge service outside of Airbnb.
Right.
Now that's available to do there. And you might, it opens up the opportunity for us as hosts to reach out and bring some of those service providers in for some of our guests that might be interested in that. Right. It's just elevating what they have access to, making it easy for them. I'm not of the opinion that is going to be necessary. We are able to create unique experiences on our properties without having to do all of that stuff. And so if I feel like we need to raise the bar, my opinion might change, but I'm not of the opinion yet that you need to bring in an experience or a service that you're personally doing to stand out in these markets. Now, partnering with those as a concierge type of a service, absolutely think you should do that.
Okay. Okay. All right, that was most of our stuff. I want to end it on the, here we go.
Okay.
The most useful advice you could give someone who's looking to build lifestyle and financial freedom in 2026. Yeah, I hope people are watching, man. These faces.
It's just the same. So good. It's the same advice I would give all the time. Don't wait. Like it always shocks me that people wait. Like the last 2 months, do you know how many times Teresa's like, why don't you like New Year's? Like, it's a fun time. It's a reset time.
No, it's not, dude. It's the same.
Here's the thing. It's one of my, and I think it's because I really started trying to answer this question before. We were talking about this the other day. And she's like, it's like that time to reset. I get all that. And I think it's really good to do that. We look back and say, what did we accomplish? What do we want to do this year? But I also look at it, and my opinion of it is, since Thanksgiving, you know how many times I have heard I'm really interested in doing something, but I'm going to wait till the first of the year. And I can't tell you how many times during the holidays over my years of helping and coaching and mentoring people that I hear that or a version of that from basically as soon as Halloween ends till the first of the year. And it drives me crazy that we allow ourselves that type of an excuse. So my best piece of advice is quit waiting to do something. Take action, right? I told you, you know, I lost my mom this year. Most people listening to this have lost somebody close. And it's a sobering reminder how short life really is, but it's also crazy how fast we forget about that. It's really sobering. It's hard while it's happening, maybe a month or two afterwards, but we forget how short that life really is. And time is not on our side, right? And so do something today. Like, don't wait for, you know, we're recording this. You're going to listen to this on New Year's Eve. And you're like, hey, listen, I'm going to wait till the first of the year. Well, congratulations. It's tomorrow, right? It's like, good for you. You can do something tomorrow now. But the problem is, you know how many people wait until the first of the year to do something? But you know how many people give up on that stuff after 2 weeks? Those things just drive me insane. And most people are so much closer than they think they are. But I also am a firm believer that nobody's coming to save you. Like the economy is what it is. The markets are what they are. The interest rates are going to be where they're at one way or the other. You can make things work in any environment. It's the actions that you're willing to take and saying, hey, listen, and I'm not here saying you have to go buy a short-term rental, but I do think you, every single person listening, every single person I talk to should be working on a passive income vehicle that works for their financial situation and can get them further ahead than they're at, because wages don't keep up with how much things cost. You have to start building something beyond what your 401k is going to provide for you, right? It's not. And so my advice is pick something and take some action. Who cares if you mess up? Like what are you like? It's like, I get that everybody that is successful, you're like, hey, listen, I'm comfortable. I don't want to mess this up. Why? Like, why? What's the worst case scenario? You screw it up, you learn something, and you learn what not to do. So the next time you can do it better. It's just, and people listening are going to roll their eyes and say, well, worst case scenario is I lose the money that I saved so hard to get. Well, what are you going to do? Put it under your mattress and do nothing? Our world, like the way that our economy is built, capitalism's built, the way that we live in the U.S. rewards risk. It does not reward saving. And so if you don't believe me, go try to run some scenarios on trying to save your way to wealth. You can't do it.
We've talked about it so impossible. Many times.
You cannot save your way to wealth. So you have to take some risks. You have to put yourself out there. You know, you want to be calculated with your risks. You want to start to stack the odds in your favor as much as possible. And I know we're preaching the choir because people don't listen to this are usually in that camp of saying, listen, I want to do something more. It's not like we're that entertaining. So we don't get people just listening to us for the hell of it, right? And so hopefully you're listening to us because you like to hear the advice that we're talking about. But at the end of the day, some people will just sit there and listen and listen and listen. And it's shocking to me, again, how often I've heard. And by the time we hit now, this time of the year, I'm so tired of hearing people say, I'm going to wait till the first of the year. I'm going to wait till after the holidays. I've got this going on. I've got that going on. I want to do this, but I'm super interested in it, but I'm going to wait. Well, guess what? You're waiting till everybody else is doing it. So you know how much, you know how much easier it is to jump in when nobody's jumping into the game, you know? I mean, they talk about it all the time. Warren Buffett says it all the time. Be fearful when others are greedy and greedy when others are fearful. And so he's talking about, and you can apply that to different times of the year. But we've talked about this before. You got the holidays, and then you've got a little sprint when everybody wants to do something. And then you've got graduation, and you've got summer break, and then you've got school starting. And then you've got right after school starts, you got between now or school starting till around Halloween, end of October, where you have another little sprint. I'm like, really? That's when people actually want to do something and want to be productive? It's the only times of the year historically that we hear when everybody's like, I'm rolling up my sleeves, I'm ready to go. Those other times I hear in the summertime all the time, I've got summer vacation, I'm going to do something after the kids get back in school, after we're done with summer break. Right now, this time of year, I'm going to do it after the holidays are over, the first of the year. It's just crazy to me. And so But yeah, my biggest piece of advice is pick a road and actually run down and stick with it. Mm. You know, we overestimate what we can do in 30 days and we underestimate what we can do in a year significantly. Mm. And so we hit that 30-day mark and we give up and we quit. And so don't be the person that's like, hey, listen, everything worth having is hard. Mm-hmm. Everything worth having is scary because you've never done it before. And so, you know, just accept that as a reality. Line yourself up with people who have done it before that can help you accelerate your progress, avoid some of the mistakes that they've made, hand you that baton so you can run faster and farther than they've run. Mm. And then take the risk and run down the road.
Yeah.
Put in the work. Mm. There you go. That's my piece of
advice. Man, I'm just – all right, let me throw in mine. I would say, man, after hearing this, I really think probably the most useful advice now – and I would say be honest with yourself and where you're at. If you're one of the people who's not willing to take the risk, be honest with yourself and sell the property. If you need to be honest with the numbers, you can't just say, oh, this is how it is. It's just bad. Okay, well, let's look at the numbers. Be honest with yourself. Be honest if you want to do this. Be honest if you're willing to make those changes. I think that's huge, especially going into a year where you see that money's going to be spent either way.
Yeah.
It's people are coming either way. Be honest if you're willing to do what it takes to get after it.
And it's so true. And then if the honest answer is, I don't want to do this.
No shame.
That's fine.
Yeah.
Go do something, though. Don't do. My advice is just because you don't want to do this or the next thing you look at or the next thing, don't stop looking. And be honest. I love it. Be honest with yourself about the road you want to run down. But once you decide you want to run down a road, understand it's going to be hard. I don't care what road you pick. It's all going to be hard. Mm-hmm. They're all going to have hiccups. They're all going to have missteps. And so really picking that road that you're willing to stick with for a long period of time. And that comes down to the honesty. You might say, hey, listen, I don't even like short-term rentals. I thought it was a good investment opportunity. And so I wanted to do it because I thought I could make some money, but I don't like this stuff. Go pick something that you're a little more interested in because you'll stick with it longer. Mm. And that longer you stick with something, that's when actually the returns start to multiply and start to compound and you actually start to see lifestyle, financial freedom, because it doesn't happen overnight.
Mm. I love it. That's what we have for today's episode. That was it. We're a little over an hour. That's it, man.
Hey, we last one of the year. Good job. Little predictions.
Thank you. I love this episode.
Let me rant on a few things.
I love this episode.
I appreciate it. So
2026 is going to be your year, people. People listening.
2026.
This is your year. I am very
bullish on 2026. I do think we hit on the housing economy in the beginning of this, the short-term rental markets, things that are happening with some of the things going on, you know, worldwide and just, you know, business-wise, I think that I think it's stacking up to be a very good year.
I have high hopes for 2026. I really do.
But you have to take action.
I'm ready, dude.
It's not going to come to you.
I'm excited.
Never has, never will. Right. Mm. So guys, we appreciate you spending your time with us as last episode of 2025, New Year's Eve. Go have an amazing and safe New Year's and looking forward to all of you that have been waiting to do something the first of the year, because we're ready to help you and we are here. So you have no more excuses. And so if you were in that camp of saying, I'm going to wait till after the first of the year, this is your call out to say, now's the time. Those of you that have been making moves all year long and all, you know, throughout the holiday seasons, we love and appreciate you being a part of our world. If you know somebody else who wants to be a part of these conversations, share the show. Those things help us. You guys know we don't run ads or sponsorships. This is the only promotion we do. At the end of every episode, I ask you to share the show. And the final, most important thing I ask you at the end of every episode, pick that one thing you can do today. Start building that life you don't want to take a vacation from. Cheers, my friends. Cheers, buddy.
Cheers.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of the Vacation Rental Revolution podcast. Share this with other people you think need to hear about it. And don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review. Hey, Grace, is there a website? Yes! For more amazing content and expert advice, visit Bodyssey.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode.